It was a day for finding things. Twain Vernier knew it in his bones. Not that he had time to dwell on the knowledge, since he was currently clinging to a cliff face half a mile off the coast of Severon, looking much more like a spider than a 17-year-old boy. A brusque October wind whipped around him, smelling of salt, snow that would soon arrive, and bird droppings. Relentless, the wind pulled Twain's hair out of the cord he'd tied it back with and cut through his thin shirt. It was well past midday, and there was fierce music on the air. It howled, "You shouldn't be here, foolish boy. Go back down now, before it's too late." Ignoring the wind, Twain jammed his light brown fingers deeper into the crevice beside his head. His muscles burned from the climb up the Tower of Stone, and his hands no longer looked like the carefully tended ones of a musician. His knuckles were bruised, his fingertips bloody. Good. Music was for a different time, a different Twain. He would break his fingers on this rock if that was what it took to reach the top and earn a way out of Severon. "Go!" With a shout, he lunged upward, snagging his fingers in a vertical crack a few inches to his right. His toes grazed a narrow ledge and he held himself there, legs trembling, breath catching in his throat, every muscle in his body straining to keep him on that cliff.
"That was close. Too close, maybe. Keep moving."
Twain willed himself not to look down. After three ragged inhales, he couldn't help it. He glanced past the slim shelf where his frozen toes curled around slick rock. Far below, waves pounded the stone tower. It had taken him most of the morning to row out to the rock, and now his rowboat bobbed in the dark water, held in place by an anchor. From where Twain clung to the cliff, the boat looked no bigger than a wash basin. It was a long way down, and there were knife-sharp rocks beneath the foaming water. Even this high up, icy spray splashed the edges of Twain's pants, stinging his bare feet. This late in the year, it was too cold to climb without shoes, but it was also impossible to make it to the razorbill's nests any other way. And Twain needed money more than he needed all his toes. If he moved fast enough, he might get to keep both. Wrenching his eyes away from the gnashing teeth of the sea, Twain measured the distance to the razorbill colony on the ledge above his head. Piles of feathers littered the top of the stone tower. So close. But close wasn't there yet. He still had to scramble from below a horizontal shelf of rock and haul himself to the top. As he considered the rock face, the wind gusted, scattering some of the valuable feathers.
"No!"
Twain shouted. He reached out to grab a feather as it floated past, but he missed. It was like watching gold fly into the sea.
"Get moving now, before the rest of the feathers are swept away."
Ordinarily dull gray, razorbill feathers turned indigo when they dropped from the birds in the wild. None of Severon's Scientifica scholars knew why it happened, and the fierce raptors withered in captivity, their plumage never changing color. Scarce, beautiful, and deadly to retrieve, the indigo feathers were coveted by the richest women in Severon. For hats, or the collars of velvet gowns, or, in the rarest of cases, to make cloaks the color of nightshade. It was said that the Caserina, the leader of Severon, had 30 such cloaks. With this sort of demand, there used to be more climbers, but one by one they met their ends on the cliffs each season. Finally, only Twain and his younger brother Zand were left. Not that Zand was much of a climber, or that Zand was here anymore.